Well, hello and welcome. This is the Advisor Pack Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little, really excited to cover what we've got today. A little bit of housekeeping. What we recommend always is to turn off everything. This system is resource intensive, so this webinar system that we use, you know, takes up memory and system resources, so we recommend, and also just to focus on the content at hand, recommend that you close your email, all your other browsers, all of your other programs, and just focus on the webinar. So the Advisor Pact Pledge, the key to this program is the representation of 30 years of research that we've done about client desires. So when you start dealing in the affluent market, there are four client expectations the more successful, the more affluent the client, the more they want these four things and claim they can't find them anywhere with any advisor at any price. So the Advisor Pact is a pledge that you make to every ideal client. It's the key to this program. And, you know, the program's all about you getting your mind around what does it mean to look a client in the eye and say, I will protect you. I'll protect your financial assets. I'll protect your financial strategy. No one else on your team has stepped up to do this. I will take on that role. Attention. No one else on your team has stepped up and offered to pay close attention so that as things over time inevitably drift off track, there is no other team member who's willing or able to proactively determine that you've drifted off track and jump in and, you know, pledge to make all the necessary recommendations that are required to get, you know, the client back on track. And then coordination. Nobody else on the team has ever stepped up and promised to coordinate all the financial assets, all the financial people in the client's life. And so you step up to do that. And this is a big relief to, well, the more affluent, the more successful the client, the busier they are, the more complicated their situations, the more that they value the idea that there is somebody now making sure that the team is talking to each other and that every recommendation, whether it's from the insurance agent or the money manager or whatever, the banker, tax accountant, all these recommendations are now perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy, which also did not exist probably before you stepped in. And then finally, transparency. This comes from a lot of research that we've done over the years about the frustration sometimes openly discussed by clients and other times just kind of a gnawing problem that they know they have, but they don't put it into words. But we've found it in the research that the more successful, the more affluent the client, the more disturbed they are about our industry, in that they worry about hidden fees and costs, and they don't mind paying a lot of money to coordinate everything, but they just feel that it's not transparent. So in steps you, making this pledge that now that you're on the scene and nobody else has pledged to do this, you will make sure that everything's transparent, that for every financial asset that they hold and for all the financial people in their life, you will make sure that they understand what they're paying for all of these financial assets and all these people in their life, financial people in their life. So that's the Advisor Pact Pledge, and that's what this program is all about. So a bit about this session each month. One thing we do know is that a financial advisor who's seriously implementing this system has lots of questions for us. Now, at the moment, we are caught up on all our commitments with you. And, you know, as you submit questions, some of them we respond right away just because you're implementing and you're trying to get things into place. And we know the members of this program who are seriously implementing submit lots of questions. You know, I'm talking about oh, the average financial advisor in their first 12 months who is seriously implementing submits, you know, 3 or 4 questions a week on average. And the most successful advisors with our system are sending 5 to 10 questions a week, every week for a year or more. And so my point is, we get these questions, and if it seems like it's urgent and you need a quick answer, we turn it around right away. But some questions, if we feel like they're not urgent and they would help everybody, we hold over to this session. So I've selected 2 questions that we will cover today that I thought would be useful to everybody. But as we're going along, if you're seriously implementing and you have questions, then enter them. You'll look on your interface for this webinar, and there's a spot for you to place questions. So as we go along here, if you have questions, feel free to put them in, and I'll deal with them at the end. So the 2 questions that I selected for today that I thought would be useful is something we don't talk about very often, and I don't have a module for this, although we do in our flagship program with, you know, where we work a little bit more closely with the advisors than we do in this program. We do deal with this. So there are some. So the question is, if I decide to update my website, do you have any advice? So this is a financial advisor who's kind of debating if they need to, I don't know, update or upgrade their website, and then asking me, what are the do's and don'ts for a financial advisor's website? So we'll deal with that today. And then we got this question. I'm loving the monthly modules you send me. We're implementing as fast as we can. What would you say is the most unique aspect of the advisor-packed business model? Okay, I'll go over this. And just to foreshadow that, I think you might be surprised that the answer to that is 3 simple words. There are 3 simple words that distinguish this program from any other program that's available for financial advisors in the financial services industry. In other words, there's no other program that can train and teach these 3 words. So we'll deal with that second. So let's deal with the website. Let's deal with the second question first. Let's just go in reverse order. So the question is, what differentiates this business model from any other? Like, there's lots of coaching, financial advisor coaching, training programs in our industry. I've been through several, as you well know. In 1999, I met Bill Bachrach, and then subsequently, in the next 3 years, I embraced the financial roadmap as my method of interacting with clients on the initial client interview. And that was a game changer for me. And so over the next 34 months, from January 1st of the year 2000, that was back Y2K, from January 1st of the year 2000 up till October 22nd of 2003, I basically went from a horrible business model that I had built up over the previous dozen years. And in 3 years with the financial roadmap, I built all this that we're studying today. And it is, in essence, a high value to the client business model that delivers tremendous value to the client. And in the process became Bill Bachrach's poster child. So if any of you are contemplating Bill Bachrach's premier coaching program, the Committed Advisor Mastermind Program, our flagship program, the sister to this one, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, which involves software that we've developed for managing, delivering truly comprehensive financial services and managing client meetings. Every member of that program gets the Trusted Advisor Toolkit as a part of the program. So we work with those advisors kind of automatically when they join Bill's program, because I was Bill's poster child. At that point in his career, in his business, no financial advisor had ever implemented his methodology as well as I did and as quickly as I did. And nobody's beat my record since. So I acquired 83 ideal clients in 34 months. That's like 2.4 ideal clients a month for almost 3 years, year after year. And no advisor that we've come across since has beat that record. So it's not about beating the record, although I would be thrilled when an advisor does beat that record, because I think it's definitely beatable. I don't think I did anything special other than just really focus. But what I developed behind the scenes, which was different in Bill's eyes, was actually how to deliver on the promise, how to deliver value that's being promised in the initial client interview to clients. And so what differentiates this program from all other programs in existence is just three words: unsolicited client referrals. And all three words are required if you're going to understand what differentiates this program from every other program. So let's kind of dissect this. If you remove the word unsolicited and you just leave the concept of just client referrals, this is actually most programs for financial advisors out there. What this means is most programs teach solicited client referrals, not unsolicited. So, and also most financial advisor coaches, of which there are hundreds out there, every coach we've ever talked to and every program that we've ever talked to deals primarily in this area, and it's solicited client referrals. Well, solicited means it relies on your skill. In other words, it's kind of kind of two parts with solicited client referrals. One is just the obvious that you don't get if you don't ask. So it's kind of the old thing. I remember back in the 80s, wholesalers with mutual fund companies used to say, you know, something like 82% of financial advisors don't even ask for referrals, therefore they don't get them. And then the other part, so that's one, you have to ask. And then number two is to teach. So in other words, teaching and coaching in these programs, teaching and coaching advisors to ask consistently. And then the other part, part two of this, is your communication skills. So it's how you ask. It's the words you use to articulate, to solicit referrals, to have a referral conversation in a way that is highly skilled. So it's all on you. You have to remember to do it, and you have to be highly skilled. Now, we've done some research on this. We've studied this. And of course, I've had my own business on this, and if clients to study this issue. And the two things that I found were is that if clients don't feel that you're especially valuable, in other words, if you're asking for referrals, but in the client's opinion, not your opinion of what value you have in the client's life, but in their own opinion, as they're sitting there quietly contemplating as you're asking whether to or not to give you referrals, if they don't feel you're especially valuable, or what we found in our research, if quietly in their own mind, they're thinking you're the same as all other advisors, in other words, they don't see much difference between you and any other advisor out there in their mind, then advisors like in that situation are going to struggle with this method, because they're asking, but the client's kind of resistant because they just don't see anything valuable or special about the advisor. The other situation is and we come across this so often, the advisor is not personally convinced that their value is high. They might talk a good game, a lot of advisors in our research, but subconsciously, they worry that maybe they're not providing as much value as they could, or they know for a fact they could be providing more value, but they've either decided, made a business decision not to do any more for clients than they currently are, or they're just not able to. They don't have the infrastructure, whatever it is. So in that situation, then your lack of confidence about your own value, it just ends up showing up in, it shows up when you ask a client for, when you solicit referrals. And so the advisors in that situation obviously struggle with this method. So if you remember to ask, and if you're highly skilled, then I have no question this works. As a matter of fact, when I met Bill Bachrach in 1999, I entered his big coaching program that he offered, Trusted Advisor Coach Program, which is what it was called at that time. So in the year 2000, I was in Bill's big program. And it was in that program Bill discovered that I was not asking for referrals by design. I had decided not to ask for referrals, and he just thought that was crazy and twisted my arm. And over the course of that year, in the year 2000, I did, at his request, start asking for referrals for the first time. And so I see the value in it, but more on that in a minute. I think, and also with Bill, I became highly skilled because Bill teaches a referral conversation, you know, that's not manipulative, and it's, you know, anyway, so I became more highly skilled at the conversation. But just for you to know, I mean, for many, many, many years, well over a decade and a half, I never asked for referrals. So anyway, take away the word unsolicited. What you're left with is solicited client referrals. Now let's move on to the next analysis. So if you take this phrase and take out the word client, then there is one premier coaching program around this. So if we're talking about unsolicited referrals, take out the word client, then, you know, this is where we're, for example, what that would be is to receive unsolicited referrals from, let's say, other professionals. It could be other people in the community, but the program that I'm aware of that's a really well known, as a matter of fact, they claim to be the number one financial advisor program in the country, or maybe in the world, who knows, is to receive unsolicited referrals from local professionals like CPAs, lawyers, etc. Now, after I built all this that we're studying, this advisor pack methodology, and sold my business, I actually went into that program and I took the whole program. It was a 1-year program. And I can't remember, it was like $30,000 or $40,000 for the year. And what happened was, you might say, why did I take it? And I really debated whether to spend the time with it or not, but I was curious. And so so I was a top advisor with TD Ameritrade, which is where we hold our client assets. And so there was some special arrangement. This was back, I think, 2005, 2006, somewhere in there. And TD Ameritrade had approached just a handful of advisors. I think it was like 15 or 20 advisors, their top advisors in their institutional platform. And they said, hey, we'll split it with you. And so it's like, you know, like you pay 15 or 20,000 and then TD paid 15 or they split it right in half. And so it wasn't a money issue, it was a time issue. And I was thinking, after I've already built and sold my business, what do I care? But I was curious. And the owner of that program is a very close friend of mine. I mean, we've been with Bill Bachrach. We've been skiing for years together, snow skiing and rafting down through the Grand Canyon and all that kind of stuff. So I knew the guy very well. And I went ahead and took the program. So let me tell you on this. So how do you get unsolicited referrals from the community, primarily from other professionals like accountants and lawyers and so forth? Well, having gone through the program, I can tell you that it involves establishing deep, deep connections with those professionals. Or what's actually taught is to establish a strategic alliance, get a strategic alliance in place with, you know, an accounting firm or a law firm and that sort of thing. Well, let me tell you, this takes a certain high level of social skills for this to work properly. I could not make it work, and I think my social professional skills are at a high level, but you know, maybe I'm just delusional. But I can tell broader in our class, of the 15 or 20 in the class who were also trying to implement, at the end of the year, I kind of surveyed the group. I just picked up the phone and called everybody. And there was one advisor out of that group that was able to put together a successful strategic alliance so that they were getting, you know, consistent referrals, enough to make it worth, you know, that you could count on for the referrals to build your business. Otherwise, you got to go out and find other ways to shake the trees and make rain and find clients. So maybe one advisor out of 15 or 20 could make this work. But I can tell you that I asked him, the owner of this, like, well, anyway, there was some data that I saw that showed that there are far less than 1% of financial advisors nationwide who do or and can rely for consistent growth from this business model. And I think he was viewing it more as an advertisement for his methodology. In other words, it's there are very few advisors out there doing this. But I learned from personal experience, it takes a very high level of skill to make this work. So if you take out the word client and you just deal with unsolicited referrals, that what you're left with is, you know, getting referrals from the community, centers of influence and so forth, but primarily local professionals. And it's hard, but it works, but it's very, very difficult to get into place. And then if you take out both words, unsolicited and client, you're just left with referrals. I mean, this is basically solicited referrals from both, well, not from clients. So it's solicited referrals from the same source, like local professionals and centers of influence and so forth. And there are, I'm not aware of any programs for this, but I am aware of coaches, like just one-on-one financial advisor coaches, and lots of them who recommend this. And what it is to just get out there and start schmoozing with local professionals and meet routinely with them, you know, set up some system where for a specific accountant, CPA, let's say, that you meet and start to develop a relationship with, you know, that maybe once a month, once every 2 months, you meet for coffee, you meet for breakfast or lunch or something. Anyway, you're meeting routinely with a professional, and you do this with attorneys and accountants and so forth. And you routinely meet with them and then persuade them to refer clients to you. So the question obviously is, what's in it for them? And all these different coaches have different ideas about that. You know, but one is, you know, you could set up kind of a referral swap, but those those are tough, because I talk to advisors who do this, and it ends up being either one-sided, where the advisor is giving tons of referrals to the, let's say, accountant, but they're not getting any back. Or the other is, you're successful at setting up these relationships, and so you're having coffee with accountants and lawyers, you know, five times a week, different ones, and you've got a few that you meet with regularly. You just don't have enough referrals to give. Like, you just don't have enough volume to support a relationship. So you have to answer that question. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm sure it does. It's just, for me, it comes back to what I don't want to focus on something where I'm relying on other people. I want to focus on something I can control. So when I was looking at all of this back in the year 2000, when I was putting all this together, I kind of got to thinking, you know, the reason I don't ask for referrals is because it's human nature that, you know, and we talk about this a lot on this session, but, and we've spoken about this before, but it basically boils down to this: receiving regular referrals on an unsolicited basis from clients is simply an indicator that you're providing unique value to that client. We say in our methodology that your single goal with every client is to become indispensable. So the word is indispensable. So you have to start. So it's a lot of work behind the scenes, But what's the crime? Instead of spending tons of time setting up strategic alliances and meeting in Starbucks with accountants and lawyers and all this sort of stuff, you know, why not invest that time thinking about each client's situation and figuring out what your client's expectations are and then exceeding those expectations? So it really boils down to investing that same amount of time that you would doing other things. And it could be client dinners, it could be seminars. I mean, there's just all these things that I've seen and tried myself back, you know, back in the 90s. But, you know, nothing beat spending the time developing an extraordinary client experience designed to exceed my client's expectations. Now, it took tons of time and effort to figure out how to exceed a client's expectations, but I can tell you, we have the research now. If you'll consistently exceed your client's expectations and pleasantly surprise them in the client meetings with things that they're like, wow, I didn't expect you to do that for me. I mean, you're looking for that reaction. And if you can pull that off, then the normal result is referrals. And it happens all the time. You go see a great movie, let's say. What's your first instinct? You want to tell everybody in your life, go see this movie. It's awesome. Great experience. Let's say you go out to a restaurant and the food is fabulous and the service is even better. I mean, we're so used to crappy service in the world that, you know, all of us, it's just a natural human reaction. It actually goes back to the caveman days, you know, this desire to interact with people you know and love and care about to share the good news of things that would be useful to the other people in your life. So if you do something in a client meeting that just knocks their socks off, the very natural thing for them to do is when you're not around and they're just interacting with other people in their life, they'll share the experience with people they think it might be relevant and useful for. So the fact that you start receiving referrals without you even asking, that's more valuable than anything that these other programs have to offer. I figured that out in the year 2000. I focused all my time and energy on creating a system to identify clients' expectations and consistently exceed them. And the payoff was amazing. I think our annual referral rate when I closed my business to new clients in October of 2002. Was when we met our objective and closed and then stopped accepting new clients. We were and continued to receive our annual referral rate was something like 12.2. I've got it listed over in the toolkit. I've got all my numbers, production numbers listed over there for members of the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, but it was something like 12.2. That means for the average referral over the past 12 months for the average referral per ideal client was 12.2. And so that's 12 referrals from every client on average. And it didn't work out exactly that way for every client. You know, some gave more than others, obviously, but that was the average. And so that's what we do in this program. And, you know, the first milestone is to get an annual referral rate that's over one. So imagine if every client you had, you know, referred at least one person that actually qualified to become an ideal client for you, you know, how would that change your business? What's an ideal client worth to you? So anyway, this program, and this is just the first 12 modules of the Advisor Pact program that you're going through. So I don't know if you're in these 12 modules or if you're beyond these, but basically, you know, this is the only program that's available to financial advisors that it moves towards, that is all about increasing unsolicited client referrals. So, you know, we start out where you understand, you learn the concept, the basic concept, you establish some goals, get some infrastructure in place. And then the whole thing with these first four modules is this one right here. It's to get out of the office. You're not going to find clients in the office. Just start measuring your potential client interaction time. And so you know, that's the first thing I ask if we start interacting with an advisor and they say they're implementing our system, the first thing I'll ask is to see their potential client interaction time. We call this PCI time. You know, let's say, well, as far back as you've got it, what was it last week? What was it the week before? You know, how many hours per week are you investing face to face or on the phone with potential clients? And yeah, it's amazing. In our program, we have advisors who went from 1 hour per week face to face or on the phone with a potential client to the average right now. Over in the toolkit, which is where we actually measure this, the average advisor in the toolkit is investing 7.8 hours a week. It's like almost 8 hours a week potential client interaction time. In other words, 8 hours consistently every week, not getting ready to get ready to talk to potential clients, but actually face-to-face or on the phone directly interacting with potential clients. And so, you know, to go from 1 hour a week to 8 hours a week, you can imagine how that's a game changer for most advisors. And it's completely in your control. It's just get out of the office and go interact with them. You know, you've got to talk. Anyway, so now, just to give you a clue, I don't think 8 hours is near enough. I mean, in my world, when this dawned on me back in the year 2000 and with lots of coaching from Bill Bachrach and others, I had an accountability coach and so forth. We start tracking the numbers, and for me, I had to do 7.8 initial client meetings to acquire one ideal client. So to drive that, I had to be investing 3 full days a week, you know, 3 full 8 hours a week, face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients, if I was going to meet my goal, which was to add one ideal client per month. Now, you may not have an aggressive goal like that. You may have a goal to add one ideal client every 2 months, one ideal client a quarter. You know, everybody's running their own journey. You're running your own race. So you've got your own journey going, and I'm not trying to impose my goals onto you. All I'm saying is this is the key module. How many hours a week are you investing face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients? So that's the first chunk. Then we introduce the idea, Bill Bachrach's old saying was, if you don't have an assistant, you are one. So we have full modules on what the proper role of an administrative manager is. And I think for those that have been through that module, you realize most, I don't know, administrative support people, sales assistants, whatever you want to call the person who is your administrative support person, almost never has the job been structured the way we lay it out here. And so sometimes your current administrative support person is a good fit for this new role, and oftentimes, most times not. And it's going to require to go out and find somebody who can actually properly support you in this role if you're going to make it your goal to exceed client expectations. Everybody's got to raise their game, including the administrative support person. So we've got modules for you to do that. Establish what's required of an administrative manager, then go out and get one if you don't already have one. Then we talk about building a team. So we talk about, you know, establishing an oversight team of 5 subject matter experts. And, you know, just as you think, you know, man, if I could just fill those 5 vacancies, and have my team in place. And of course, we teach it in a way that you don't even have to have any budget to pay these people. You set it up. Most advisors take our advice and set it up initially so that your future ideal clients are going to be paying these people, not you. And so it's, you know, setting up the arrangement subject to, you know, acquiring an ideal client. Then you have a deal where you've got a team in place. But the point is, you think, wow, if I can just fill all these 5 vacancies and get my team in place, I'm good to go. I'm done. Well, you are light years ahead of most advisors at this point once you have every vacancy filled. But then the next step is to begin immediately evaluating each and every team member. And so we go through that module. The second module is evaluating your deliverables team, mainly because as technically skilled as these people, I'm sure, are, what you'll find is that very few of them understand how to exceed a client's expectations. And that's where we kind of move to the next stage. And you start evaluating your team and making sure that they are actually willing and able to embrace and accept the idea that they're not going to remain on the team if they can't actually show evidence that they are exceeding clients' expectations within their narrow field of finance. Anyway, so building a team, evaluating the team, you know, this is where our model just is so different from the traditional model in the industry. In our model, yeah, sure, the client has their accountant, their money manager, they've got a lawyer usually, estate planning lawyer or something. They certainly have insurance agents for their car and home and stuff like that. That's their, what we call, you know, we call that their implementation team for the client. These are the professionals that were already in their life when you came on the scene. And then in come you, you've got these five subject matter experts who are now going to provide oversight. And none of those people in the client's life, does the client ever have to interact with again? You as a trusted advisor are now the single simple point of contact for the client. And your oversight team is going to reach out and coordinate with the client's implementation team. And that's where the magic happens. Your team makes sure there is an overarching plan in place and that none of these people on the implementation team are approaching the client to give recommendations without going through your team first to make sure that their recommendations are perfectly aligned, you know, with the overarching strategy. So that's the big difference. And so you build your deliverables team, get those five subject matter experts in place, and then you begin to evaluating them to, you know, assess and make sure that they are improving as it comes to exceeding client expectations, which, you know, that's a lifetime goal, you know, for you to master, you know, the skill of, you know, how to deliver an extraordinary client experience. It will always improve. Clients will always be giving you clues about more things that you could be doing to exceed their expectations. And your team's got to be tuned in and listening carefully to what the client's saying and doing. And, you know, that's what we teach in this program is to, first of all, make sure you only accept team members who already have clients that meet your ideal client profile. Therefore, at least as a baseline, they have an understanding of what those kind of clients expect, or at least they have experience on what to do for that kind of a client so you don't get fired. Anyway, so now you've got your team, and the next couple of modules are establishing your deliverables. So we have the 10 client deliverables. Those are presented in two modules. And this is really just sitting down with each of your subject matter experts and saying, look, what are the actual client deliverables that we need to do in each of your narrow fields of finance on an annual basis to exceed an ideal client's expectations? In other words, if the goal is the client is impressed, pleasantly surprised consistently, what do those deliverables look like? And then so you sit down with the tax subject matter expert and you get the ones for tax. And then you sit down with the estate planning attorney and get the ones for estate. And then same goes with money management, insurance, so forth. So so these are the 10 client deliverables, and you sit down with your newly formed team to let them deploy their years of skill and experience to help you establish your deliverables. Now, for those that are in the toolkit, we provide the deliverables. There are 142 deliverables checkpoints that are supporting the 10 client deliverables. But in your case, you know, maybe you have 50, maybe you have 200. We only tell you about the 142 because we think that ought to be a benchmark. You know, you should keep thinking until you have at least 142, because that's what we have. Then you focus on the onboarding of new clients. This is a very important part of the client experience. No client is ever more excited to work with you than they are right at the beginning, so that first quarter. And so we show you how to implement the 3-meeting process, and the first 104 days is really that period of time where your team gets together to discuss and to put into place for a new client their comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. And it's every member, every subject matter expert contributes their recommendations, what this client needs to do to get on track, remain on track. And, you know, what do they need to do? You know, what advice do they, does your team have for this client to make sure that their financial house is in perfect order and stays that way forever? So this first 104 days is really, really important because the financial plan, I never use that term. We call it a comprehensive lifetime strategy, but whatever. This is where the overarching strategy is established. It's really, really important. And then, so that's that. And then, you know, then the next step is really to focus, and this is what you'll do for the rest of your career. The hero's journey and the extraordinary client experience, those modules kind of, after you've got all the previous stuff in place, we show you that now the name of the game is now you have a skilled team, you have a team that's being evaluated regularly, and they know that what the goal is to exceed client expectations, so nobody can be complacent or just think, hey, you know, I'm an accountant and I've been doing this forever, so this is all they need and I'm just not going to do any more. No, if you have a client whose, you know, expectations are not being exceeded, then, you know, the whole idea of the team goal is to be willing, everybody on the team has to be willing and able to step up and brainstorm and think through what would pleasantly surprise this client at the next meeting. And so we have a module, which if many of you have gone through it already, but it's to make the client the hero of the story and to make this whole adventure fun for them. Like, you know, having a meeting to come sit down and talk to the financial advisor every 4 months, it should not be an agonizing experience where, oh my God, I got to go sit down and listen to my financial advisor for an hour. And they fight with their spouse because their spouse doesn't want to attend and all that. It should not be grueling to sit down with their advisor to discuss the actualization of all their most important financial objectives. It should be fun. I mean, they're coming in to meet with you to talk about their financial future and what's possible and to measure progress. I mean, it should be an extraordinary experience. And so these two modules help you make sure that when clients come in and meet with you, they look forward to it and they leave every meeting thinking, wow, got a lot out of that meeting. So we work on mapping out and kind of step by step, you know, orchestrating the client experience. And most advisors have not sat down to really think through every interaction touch point that a client has with their business. But that's what we do. We kind of walk through the foot, put yourself in the client's shoes and make sure that, you know, when they drive up to the office, it's as extraordinary an experience as you can make it. Even if it means having someone wait for them in person when they arrive downstairs, whatever. You know, we just talk about what will it take to make your client's experience extraordinary. And then after that, it's measuring the client's referral rate. I mentioned to you that, you know, when we closed our business to new clients, our annual referral rate was something like 12.2. So that's an average of over 12 referrals per client per year on average. Well, you might think, yeah, well, after you closed your business to new clients, that stopped. No, because we viewed that for what this is. Referrals are nothing more than a client satisfaction measure. Like I said, if you're creating a remarkable experience, then it's natural your clients will remark about you when you're not around. So, you know, this is the only program that exists anywhere in the financial services industry that focuses on these three words: how to increase unsolicited client referrals. So, and we have three programs. We have first program is I drive, you sit in the shot, you sit shotgun, and don't touch the wheel because I'm driving. So I parachute in like the Green Berets into your firm, and I just hire all your subject matter experts. You know, I just do our team, toolkit team, does everything for you. So that's one program. Our flagship program is program number two, where you drive the car and I'll sit shotgun. I'll kind of be the quarterback telling you what to do over your shoulder and my team. I say me, but it's my senior toolkit team and me. But that's program number two. And then you have this program, the Advisor Pack Monthly program, where you drive the car and I'll sit in the back seat. It's kind of a do-it-yourself. This is for advisors who are not sure yet, or I would say many advisors in this program have made the decision that they want to reinvent the wheel, that rather than just get involved with the software and the whole program the way the toolkit, where you drive the car and I sit shotgun, rather than implement a system that's already been developed. Many advisors want their own imprint on the system. So many advisors in this program are specifically trying to build, in essence, the toolkit, but in their own image, like in their own vision of what it should be, which is fine. And so what we do in this program, this is for advisors who, we just lay out how we built the toolkit. I just take you step by step exactly the way we built the toolkit. And then, you take what works and just reject what you don't want to do. It's take it or leave it. You do what elements you want. So that's it. But it boils down to these three words. If you find what I found, that these are the most powerful three words in our industry, that if you can build a business where you can rely on consistent levels of unsolicited client referrals. In other words, what if your clients were so thrilled with what you did, they're out there like a marketing team talking you up, saying good things behind your back so that you are getting a sufficient number of referrals without asking to grow your business. Well, that's the goal of this. And we found that is the ultimate asset, is if you can build a business that's growing without you having to go out and find new clients. That was worth the time to do all of this. And it is quite a bit of effort to get the infrastructure in place, to build the team, to lead the team, and then to consistently and continually find new ways to impress your clients. I mean, that does require effort. And so, but the payoff in the end, unsolicited client referrals, is, I think it's the most valuable asset any financial advisor can have. Okay, so that's that question. Now to the first question. If I decide to update my website, do you have any advice? What are the do's and don'ts for a financial advisor's website? By the way, I do see a couple of questions came in. I will deal with those. Let me get through this content because two advisors did ask these two questions. So let me get them out of the way. And I'm going to actually take you over to the live site. Okay, so let me talk about websites for a minute. So I know financial advisors have websites. Almost every financial advisor has websites. And as a matter of fact, we're going to look at a few right today. But let me just tell you the philosophy and what we, in our bigger programs where we deal more directly with the advisors, our philosophy on this. So you need to decide for your own website, what's the objective? Is it to serve existing clients? Because keep in mind, the whole premise of our model is that 99% of everything you do is focused on exceeding your own existing clients' expectations. So the question is, your website, is it to help exceed your existing clients' expectations? Or is it more or less an advertisement where you're crossing your fingers and hoping that new clients will stumble across it? Or if you get a referral, they're going to check you out, and they will check you out, to make sure you're for real. And when they get to your website, what are they going to find? And what we found is that the website should be focused on clients. Now, that's our opinion. So I'm not going to go into that. I actually, we could talk a whole, if you have a question about that, submit it through the Advisor Pack Monthly contact us link on your program, and I'll answer that some other month. Like, what would that look like? But like, what should a website look like if the objective is to serve clients and exceed their expectations? Well, the thing is that we found that was the best. And most financial advisors do not focus their website on serving existing clients. They might have a client portal where they log in and there's some stuff there. Or you might use eMoney or something like that where you've got some thing that you do where you're serving existing clients. But for the most part, most advisors, when you look at their website, it's kind of a big advertisement where they're hoping that somebody who sees it will want to pick up the phone and call and do business with you. So what we recommend is for that, instead of doing that on your website, we recommend for new clients, you just create a link saying, you know, if you're not a client of this firm and you want to know more about us, you know, here's my LinkedIn page. Now, we recommend that you use your LinkedIn page for kind of describing what you do and how you do it and all that. Now, you can set your LinkedIn page up however you want. If you're asking, Mark, what do you recommend? I recommend you go through this structure that in the section, let's see, what's the section called where you do all this describing? So it's called your summary. So you've got two things. You've got your title, and I notice, and it's called current position. Headline. This is where LinkedIn categorizes you based on what you put here. And I notice advisors make the mistake of trying to get really fancy and cute describing what they are, thinking they're differentiating themselves from other financial advisors, when in fact, in LinkedIn, you're confusing everyone about what you do. If you put as your title, you know, I help people achieve the dreams that they've always, that they've always had in mind or something like that. We'll look at a few in a minute here and see, but listen, it should be simple. The key to the headline is simplicity and clarity. So you need to describe yourself in what terms you think of yourself. Now, financial advisor is kind of a generic term. So I'm a financial advisor. I'm comfortable with the term financial advisor. I would recommend all of you use financial advisor in your headline. But if you're an investment advisor, I would put financial advisor and then put that little bar, which that bar is right on most keyboards. It's right above, it's the uppercase right above your enter key or your carriage return enter key on your keyboard. It's that little up and down vertical bar. I would say financial advisor and then do that bar and list whatever other titles you have. Like if you're going to say, I help people achieve dreams that they thought they couldn't achieve or whatever you want to describe that's cute, just do it after you've done the simple, straightforward thing like financial advisor and then investment advisor or insurance professional or, I don't know, tax accountant or estate planning specialist or whatever other thing. But start with financial advisor, then some what other title, but keep it simple, and then put another bar and then put your cute thing about helping people and whatever you have that you really think potential clients want to see. But it's this section down here that's called the summary that I'm talking about. And all I'm saying is when I read financial advisor summaries, I'm so confused about what they do. And all I'm saying is I recommend this format. What do I do? How do I do it? Who do I work with? This is your ideal client profile. My background. Just keep it simple. So if you want, I would say go to my LinkedIn page and just look how I've done it and then just clean yours up. Go in and keep your profile. Now, why? So the question is, why do all this? Why even, do advisors actually get clients from online? No, they do occasionally. I mean, I hear stories every month of advisors who got some big client through, you know, some online strategy. But I'm talking about not consistently, not like we're teaching over in the Advisor Pact monthly program where you get out and you measure your potential client interaction time and you just do the basic blocking and tackling in our industry, which is go out and interact with a lot of people. And then eventually some of them will meet your ideal client profile. But I guess my point is everybody will eventually, who's thinking about seriously doing business with you, they will check you online. And if your online site is all about serving and exceeding the expectations of your existing clients, but there's a link over here to LinkedIn. And by the way, when they put your name into Google or into any search engine, if they put quotes around your first, middle, and last name, LinkedIn will show up. LinkedIn is great. It's perfect for SEO. If somebody Googles you and they have your name correct, LinkedIn will show up as one of the top. It probably will beat out your own website in terms of coming up in Google. So don't overlook LinkedIn. All I'm saying is people will come and look at your presence online just to make sure you're for real. Okay. Now, the only other thing I was going to say about this on the website is, you know, when we go back to, let me go back and talk and show you when we were talking about this whole thing in our module. To, we have the deliverables, team recruitment process, and then evaluating your team. Well, when you're talking about building your five subject matter experts, these five subject matter experts that are going to comprise your team, the one tool that exists today that did not exist when I, you know, owned my business before I sold it, and even after I sold my business, I went into partnership with another guy, and the firm, we went around purchasing other financial advisors, businesses who are retiring and so forth. And so ultimately had 11 offices in 9 different states. And so there was a lot of subject matter expert acquiring and so forth. But the one tool that we never used that I'm seeing advisors use to implement our system, our method, the deliverables team recruitment process, this process that we have a module for, it can be used in LinkedIn. So where you find your candidates in our process is entirely up to you. And I'm just going to show you something that I think is very powerful in LinkedIn that maybe you did not know how to do. Like, I don't think finding clients is a strategy that works. Matter of fact, I go to the biggest conference on online strategies in the world. It's the Social Media Marketing World Conference. Candidly, the only reason I go is because it's here in San Diego. But if you're interested, let me just show you a couple quick things here. If you put in title and let's say CPA and tax. So accountants, CPAs can be audit and corporate and all that. And then you go over here to all filters and let's say I want second and third line. So people that are not connected to me. So these are people who are not connected to me. And let's say I want to know in my town. So greater San Diego area, I'll check that. And then industry accounting. So see up here, I've got 4 filters applied. Plus they have CPA and tax in their name. There's 238 of them. So nowhere is it faster to identify people who are like whatever subject matter expert vacancy you're trying to fill than LinkedIn, in my opinion. So here's Dorothy McLinn. I don't know her. I'm not connected to her. I'm trying to connect with her, which like in Facebook language, that would be like to friend her so that we're connected and we can talk. But LinkedIn members are mostly likely accept invitations if they include a personal note. Do you want to add a note or just send it? Always add a note. Okay, and if you want to know what we've seen the most success with, and we've tested this a little bit, a message like this. And so just write this down or go back and listen to the replay. And then you change the name to Dorothy. Hi, Dorothy. I have some clients here in San Diego who need a skilled tax professional. Business and personal. Are you accepting new clients? If so, I'd like to understand a bit more about the services you offer in case we have a client needing your services. Look forward to connecting. And then I don't have this. I didn't copy the whole thing somehow. Anyway, there's a little more to it, but just in the interest of time, So there's a character limit. So in Mark L. So I'll go ahead and send it. I don't know Dorothy, but let's see. Next month, if you're interested, ask, and I'll see if Dorothy connected. My point is, once you're connected, first line, like, then you can actually message them. There's a section, and it works like Facebook Messenger, where then you can, in essence, you know, talk to them as much as you want and ask them, you know, what's your website? And that should all be on their LinkedIn page. But you want to start connecting with a professional for a vacancy that you're trying to fill. We've seen a lot of advisors use LinkedIn successfully. And if I had to do it all over again, LinkedIn didn't exist when I was doing mine. But I think it is probably the easiest, quickest way to connect with all the professionals. Then from there, you can decide if they're any good, if they're up to your standards, and if they're capable of exceeding your client's expectations. All right, we are now past the hour, so let me look at the questions. I have a question here. Let's see, Tim, when you had clients, how far did your totally comprehensive, hang on just a second, let me get back. Give me a second so I can get to my screen from which I can launch whatever might answer your question. Okay, so when you had clients, how far did your totally comprehensive financial planning go? It was totally comprehensive financial services. I don't use the term financial planning, mainly because it confuses clients. They have a preconceived notion about financial planning. But the question is, I know you had 120 deliverables. It's actually 142 deliverables checkpoints that support the 10 client deliverables. But would you consider your services as what is called a family office for your clients? Did you do bill paying or suggest or recommend concierge medical doctors? Those clients that wanted to receive that kind of medical treatment, family meetings, family security. I'm just wondering what kind of boundaries you placed upon your practice, what was considered out of bounds or services you didn't handle. That's a good point. Tim, connect on the Advisor Pack Monthly. Contact us if you want to know more about this. But the simple answer is, yes, I did all that. But we did it. We had a base level of services. All right. So let me just log into the toolkit, and I'll show you what the baseline, what those 142 deliverables checkpoints are, is what is typically required to exceed the expectations of a client to make sure their financial house is in perfect order. So this is not the program you're in. This is the software over in the toolkit. But if you want to just see the deliverables checkpoints, these 142 checkpoints, sorted by, I'll blow this up a little bit, sorted by the 10 client deliverables, you know, so under the GPS, like that's the, well, you'll have to go look at the 10 client deliverables, but there are 7 deliverables that we do annually for every ideal client for that. Client progress reports, there are 6 deliverables checkpoints that we put together for that. Assets and money management, that's a big one. So there are, let's see, 41 deliverables checkpoints for that. So you get the idea. You're going to sit down with your subject matter experts and come up with what I'm going to call a baseline. That allows you to set up a minimum fee. So for me, you know, it's $35,000 per year. We have advisors that we're working with that charge $50,000 per client per year after implementing our system and the 10 client deliverables, getting them in place. We have one advisor who charges $100,000 per client per year. And so the answer is to your question, you know, it's what do you want your baseline service to be? What we decided was set the minimum so that, you know, $35,000 a year will exceed your expectations on the baseline of services. Tax, money management, insurance, you know, the 5 subject matter experts, whatever, you know, for let me go back, for these 5 disciplines: tax, money management, financial planning, estate planning, and insurance. So we'll make sure that we have all the, and those are the 10 client deliverables, by the way. So we'll make sure that we have all the deliverables in place to deliver on the promise of exceeding expectations in those 10 client deliverables. But then to answer your question, we had a curiosity. It kind of was more around the 80-20 rule. We thought, okay, so if we have a client, if every client's paying $35,000, then 80-20 would, the 80-20 rule, kind of as a powerful law of the universe, would say that there's got to be at least 20% of our clients who are able and willing to pay double that. In other words, $70,000 per year. So we, just as an internal exercise, we identified who they were, and they were there were indeed for us, you know, roughly 18 or 19 out of our 100 clients, 18 or 19 who were able, in our opinion, would be able and willing to pay double the annual fee. But the question is, what could we be doing for them that they would think would be worth double? So that's where we started figuring, you know, well, for some clients, and these are custom deliverables checkpoints, you know, the concierge, being able to recommend concierge, you know, doctors. And, you know, we actually ran family reunions for our clients because we had, you know, granddad, who's the owner of the family money, the empire, you know, he's worried that his family's drifting apart. So, you know, we create these extraordinary events where, anyway, long story short, there were no boundaries, but we had a baseline of services. Then we had this theory that, you know, 20% of our clients would be willing to pay double, and they did. So we started coming up with these custom deliverables checkpoints like you're talking about. And then once we had 15 clients paying us $70,000 a year, we thought, you know, 80-20 of 80-20. So of those 15 clients, there's got to be 20%, you know, three clients willing to pay double that, $140,000 a year. And so we looked at our client situations and thought, yeah, there are. There are at least four clients that could afford to pay $140,000 a year. Now, the question is, what on earth would we be doing that they would think that's worth that? So I put my team on that, all my subject matter experts. And of course, all you have to do is give them, offer them a piece of the pie, and they'll come up with the most stunning deliverables you can imagine, like way out of the box things. And it's on a per client basis. You figure the custom deliverables for each client that would be worth that to them. And so that's how we played that game. So I hope that helped. And if you need more than that, then, you know, ask us through the system. All right. Second question, also from Tim. I follow Bill, the financial roadmap script from beginning to end with every client prospect. When I state what they will get, I mention the four areas, cash reserves, debt, insurance, assets, as Bill teaches. I know I'm going to do much more than what we mention. When I say, let me tell you what we're going to get, how did or do you flesh out or give the prospect the full idea of all that you'll do for them, the 142 deliverables checkpoints. Okay. The way I did it, the way I do it is I just use and still do the script that he gives. So we've come to the point in our time together, you get to decide whether you want to hire me to create this strategy for you. And here's exactly what you're going to get. And then you just run through it exactly as he teaches. And so it just lays it out, and then you just shut up. I mean, the point of that point, at that point in the script, it's really to get enough to set the table, to get enough issues on the table, which at that point you've gone through their values, their goals, all the money section. Now you're kind of got all that done. Their financial roadmap is now complete. And so you just, most clients, most potential clients have reacted at this point. They are just either over the top, really excited, or, you know, in rare cases, they're complacent and, you know, didn't. But most clients, it's an extraordinary experience for them. So now it's just to get that question out on the table and then shut up and let them talk. So they've got all this stuff going through their mind. And we think there are 10 pivotal questions. And if you're curious about what those are, contact us in the toolkit. This is exactly what I mean. If you're implementing any advisor that's implementing, as they implement, they're going to have lots of questions for us. So, but what I did was I figured out, and frankly, I figured this out from listening to 200 of my financial roadmap recordings. So I know if you're following Bill Bachrach's method, you're recording these financial roadmaps. So you don't have to go through 200, but listen to the recordings of every single one that you've had up to this point and fast forward it to the section of when you shut up and say, you know, we've come to the point in our time together, and then you shut up. Do you want to hire me? What questions did they ask? Like, go through every recording you've got up to this point and write down the questions that they actually did ask. So at that point, now you're going to get to hear how a real client reacts to everything you've presented up to that point. And what I found was there were 10 questions that just recycled over 200 meetings. There were just 10 questions. Maybe you'll find there's 3 or 4 or 5. I mean, for the obvious ones. So yeah, I'd love to move forward. So what does this cost? And then what exactly do I get? And so you wait for them to ask, Tim. So when do you present all this about the 10 client deliverables and all that? I never do. I just wait for them to ask. Some do, some don't. Some clients are also confident that you can do what they want because they're thinking in their world, am I going to be able to hire this person and, you know, have a better chance of achieving my own objectives by the dates that I want to achieve them? And you'd be surprised how many clients just intuitively figure out during the financial roadmap, you know, Tim's the guy for me. He's taken me through a process no other advisor is. He now knows more about me than any other professional on the planet. And it's sitting right here on this financial roadmap. And so you'd be surprised how many clients just don't need to know all of that. And so I would suggest don't have necessarily any collateral marketing material. If you do create anything as far as collateral marketing material, I recommend don't do the 10 client deliverables, but put together something like this. We call this the lollipop chart. Just create something like this where you can put this in front of a client if you need a visual aid, because most people are visual, to just explain how you're going to make sure we're going to meet 4 times a year, sorry. My mind is moving faster than my lips, so I got to slow down. You're going to meet the 3-meeting process. You're going to meet 3 times a year, and you explain to the client, we are going to meet every 4 months, and it's just a continual process of measuring whether you're on track or off track and improving and accelerating your pace to make sure that you achieve all your objectives on time. So all the 10 client deliverables, all the deliverables checkpoints, all these things that the typical financial advisor, because we're technical people, we think they want to see all this. So where are the 10 deliverables? Let me see them. And what are the 142 checkpoints? I got them all listed. No, that'll take you down a rabbit trail of an unnecessary, unproductive conversation. This is what you have in front of them. You just need to persuade them you've got goals, and your best chance of making sure that you achieve all those goals is with me. Because I'm going to protect you, I'm going to pay attention, I'm going to coordinate all these people and all these assets, and it's going to be fully transparent, and I'm going to be the one that, as we sit down every 4 months, I'm going to tell you, you're either on track or off track, and we're going to make forward progress. You're going to have this overwhelming sense that you're making forward progress. So I just simply, Tim, wait for them to ask, and as you go through your recordings, you know, you're going to find the questions are pretty basic. It's like, well, what does all this cost? And what is the process? So if I hire you today, what happens next? And so you remember we have this module where we go through and see if I can even find it quickly, where you have the first 104 days. So after you go through this module, then you'll be clearer than you ever have before about what the onboarding process is for a client over the first quarter of a year, where you actually are going to sit down with a team of experts on your team and create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy covering all these, you know, 5 areas of personal finance for the client. And, you know, so that's one of the questions in the 10 pivotal questions that I found clients typically ask. So if I got you started today, you know, kind of walk me through step by step what happens next. That's one of the questions. So short answer, which this isn't that short, but we're over time. So it's, I don't have a presentation, Tim. I just wait for them to ask. And look, if they're serious and they want to move forward with you, they'll have questions. And if you want to script it out, then my best recommendation for you is to go back and listen to every financial roadmap, write down every question any real potential client has ever actually asked, and then forget all the ones that are in your head, like what are the 100 deliverables and all that stuff. Forget what you think they're going to ask and just script out and master and practice it with people in your, you know, with your spouse and with your administrative support person, and just practice over and over the answer to those, you know, 5 or 10 questions that you're getting a lot. Have a concise, compelling conversational response to each of those questions, script it out, and master those, and then you'll be prepared. You'll know exactly what to say when a client asks you a question at that point in the financial roadmap. So I hope that helped, and that's it. So that's it for the Advisor Pack monthly session for March, and keep those questions coming in. As you're implementing seriously, just contact us constantly with anything that crosses your mind that you think will help accelerate your results. Our toolkit team is standing by, ready, willing, and able to help you make progress. And, you know, take advantage of it. That's all I can say. So until next month, I'm Mark Little, and we wish you all the best in implementing.